Morning Crossfire on 99.3 Nigeria Info.
All right, welcome back. It's still the Morning Crossfire right here on 99.3 Nigeria Info. My name is Kofi Bartels, talking about Nigeria's economic challenges this morning on the program. The struggles of Nigeria's economy are well documented. And of course, as you heard in our news at 8 this morning, the International Monetary Fund has been having quite a number of things to say about the Nigerian economy. Our guest this morning on the program, I think I should call him Chief. He's earned the title. Bola Olojede, he's a development economist. We'll introduce him some more as the program goes on. He's our guest this morning and, of course, doing analysis with us. What he knows to do best is to give us the best analysis you can have regarding not just the Nigerian economy, but other things as far as a national life is concerned. He is one of the most versatile analysts I've come across since I moved to Lagos to do this business. Mr. Olojede, it's good to have you on the crossfire this morning.
Yeah, nice to be here. Thank you, Kofi.
All right. The president has been speaking about his plans for the agricultural sector. Let's take a moment for us to go back and just listen to what Mr. President said. He hosted some persons and he had quite a lot to say. His plans to achieve food security or food sufficiency in the country. We'll just listen to a minute or two of that and then we'll come back and we'll do the talking about what the president has said, what the president has been doing, what the governor of the central bank has said, what the CBN has been doing in terms of the monetary policies, what the coordinating minister for the economy has said and what they've been doing, and of course what the IMF is saying. Listen to the president.
The job we are doing is in conformity with the teaching of Rasul sallallahu alaihi wasallam. Looking at the welfare of the people, we have to equip all the hospitals with modern equipment, train our doctors, and retrain them to take care of the welfare of the people. We have paid for the insurance welfare, social welfare of the people, so that every citizen of this country will be insured for health.
We'll be able to feed ourselves.
We are going to cultivate more farmland. We are going to equip farmers with low interest or no interest loans. We are going to bring tractors into this economy. We are going to invest in irrigations. Nigeria will become net exporters of food.
All right, so Bola Olojede, the president is probably obviously aware, seems to be aware of the what some have called a food shortage. I do not know. Is it a food shortage or, let's say, an affordability problem, as far as you can see?
Well, it's a mix of the two. The reason why you have unaffordability is that prices are going up beyond the rate of increase of people's income. Now, if you have enough supply will help to moderate the prices. That is what it will do. And then it becomes affordable to the people. So, obviously, if we get more production into the space, the prices will go down.
Okay.
So, that is what is fueling the thinking of, you know, when the president was saying, we will put more lands into cultivation, yeah, we'll produce more this, we'll produce more that, yeah, we'll do irrigation farming, yeah, because he knows that if the supply is huge, not only are we going to feed the people of Nigeria, we have the capacity to feed entire West Africa if we set our mind to it.
Reason I'm asking if it is a food shortage or an affordability problem is because I haven't, you know, gone to the market or sent anyone to the market or heard anyone say, I went to the market and there was nothing on sale. I see all the shops are full of food. I see, you know, shops in my area. When I'm driving on the roads, I see the markets. There's fish, there's gari. It's there. It's the price. So I just want to talk about, is it mainly an affordability issue or a food issue? You talked about the fact that when we have a lot of the items, the price may go down. But I always cite the example of COVID, and I may have asked you this question before, or given you this story before, that when COVID hit, the price of garri went up from 500 naira per Costa rubber and never went down. And then the market people are also telling us that the cost of transportation because of the removal of petrol subsidy. So what do you think about that? Are we sure that if we flood the market with more food, that even if the price of petrol doesn't go down, even if the dollar, the exchange rate is not improved to favor the naira, that the price of food will come down?
Let's start from the fact that a lot of the food we eat are imported anyway, and it's important to know that. And that includes even some of the basic agriculture products. So if you bring them in, definitely there are cost implications that are attributable to the issue of dollars. There are also issues of, infrastructure. So you have a disconnect between centers of production and centers of consumption. So the rural roads are not good. A lot of wastage along the line because there are no storage facilities. All those things are all cost. They are cost elements that eventually go into whatever is made available in the market. However, where we see maize, a friend of mine, I do agree with him from time to time, told me last week that maize has crossed 600 naira per kg.
Maize?
Yeah. Okay. Now, maize used to be about 120, 150 max around September, October. Of course, by December, it starts to go up. But by February, I cannot remember when maize has gone that up. In February, for all the years that I've been involved in maize production, in maize. So it means that something is wrong. There are several factors that we have to look at. One of it, for example, is the fact that people are taking our food outside the country. The neighboring countries are not as fertile as we are. Those ones close to the desert and the rest of it. And they come into there are major markets in Kano and the rest of them where they come into and get all this product and get it out. So the volume that is available in the country is not enough for our own consumption. You see, even states like Niger saying, look, I'm not going to allow anybody to come and buy my food.
What do you think of that policy?
It's not going to work.
Really?
The only way government can compel that is if government has its own thing that is bringing to the market. You're not going to tell me how I will sell my product or who I will sell it to. But if you bring your own to the market, okay, that's fine. You can sell it to whoever you desire to. Mm-hmm. I'm not saying we should leave everything free and allow foreigners to come and buy off our food. I'm just saying it is not a sustainable way to dealing with the problem that we have at hand. In this same speech of the president, it was a recent one, right?
Yes, yes.
In July, the president gave a speech around the same agriculture. In that July 2023, in that speech, he spoke about 500,000 hectares of additional cultivation. He said, we have arable land, we are not farming enough. Let's put 500,000 more into agri. He spoke about irrigated farming. We are not doing irrigation. So a lot of our farming is being done around the season. Nobody does that in the modern world any longer. He spoke about several things. How we will support this, support that. That was July. We could have done two cycles of maize. We could have done two cycles of rice. Between that period and now that we are saying these things. So the question is not, we must step beyond the talk. We have the analysis. We know the problem. We have arable land. We have this. We have that. We must leave that space of talking into the space of doing. The real solution is in the doing, not in the talking about what we are going to do. If you said we were going to do it in July, right now what we should be talking about is how far is that journey that started in July? Maybe we needed some months to ramp up and put all the things in place. So maybe it is only one season of corn that we have been able to put. Maybe it is not 500,000 hectares that we have put on ground. Maybe it is 200 that has come on stream. But if in July we say that, and in February we are still saying we are going to, when is this going to come? When is it going to come into manifestation?
Quite interesting. So the president gave something similar, promise in July.
And
the president also promised to hit the ground running. As far as his economic policies are concerned, do you think that he has hit the ground running?
In some things, you might say yes. Yeah, it probably has. But even in some of those things, it left a few questions. For example, we have an issue of fuel subsidy, which nobody has been able to confront for a very long time. Fuel subsidy did not just come in here. It's been on the table. OBJ, Yaradua, Jonathan, Buhari, everybody knew that problem. Nobody was able to confront it. In fact, the last thing that Buhari did, when he said, oh, we're going to deal with this fuel subsidy, and then Labour and everybody threatened him, he just postponed it by 18 months. And that 18 months happened to fall into the current regime. You know, so that's a bold step. But the question that has been asked is that when plotting that kind of a bold step, there will be consequences by virtue of that step. So it doesn't appear as if the preparation for what would be the consequences was robust enough. So while on one side, you took a policy direction which undoubtedly was the right policy, that is where we needed to have gone, all the other political parties said the same exact thing, that we're going to remove that fuel subsidy. And it has been a tough one. Nobody has been able to confront it. You have done it. But then, it's a process. So the entire process in conceptualizing this will have been that I will remove it. These are the likely consequences, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. And this is how
we plan to do it. But he didn't have let's say his cabinet formed at that time. He had something that looked at an economic team, you know, but really didn't have his full squad, his full 11. At that time, do you think that may have contributed to the fact? And if you look at his script, he wasn't on that script, you know. Do you think maybe he didn't really think it through properly? It was just something he said off the cuff. That's number one. Number two, he actually said he didn't remove subsidy. There was no provision for it in the budget.
There was first of all the law. Would say, oh, the law already removed it. And that is true. There's no provision under the Petroleum Industry Act for subsidy. You know, as a matter of fact, what that act did was to tell us how we will run on the downstream side of things. And it excludes subsidy. There's no room for it at all. The other part is to say, the budget provided up until mid-year. So there is even no budget to fund this. All those things are good. There's no, I'm not condemning any of those issues. I think I still have a strong conviction that was the right policy direction.
All right.
But my where I think we didn't do well enough, or it didn't do well enough, is the articulation of what are the possible consequences of this policy. You see, the 11, the squad might not be ready as at that time, but he had a squad that was engaging with the previous government. We all know that this subsidy is a major issue. What it means is that even in that process between February, when the election was done, and May, when that announcement was made, a dedicated team could have looked at, okay, this is what the president is going to do when he comes in. These are the likely consequences when those actions are taken. So when those consequences come, this is how we will approach those issues. To my mind, that part of the consequences and how we will approach it were not robustly thought through.
Do you think this president is quite he's caused, how do you score him on well thought out policies, not the ideas and the desires and the wishes and the thinking, but in terms of well strategically you're a strategy person, I'm sure, and all you do and all that. Well-defined, well-thought-out, planned, and laid-out policies with a clear roadmap, clear template, clear plan. Do you see that in the way he does his, in the way he does his things?
I will concede certain things which might not have helped matters for him. For example, when he was coming in, there was an information about how much we had in our reserves.
Mm.
So, but by the time he came in and forced the release of the audited report, what we saw was totally different. Literally all the money I've been either pledged for forward or did something and did that. Mm-hmm. So if you thought you had $20 billion in reserve, for example, only for you to find out that you had only five, whatever you had planned would definitely need to change.
All right. So that may be responsible for some of the inconsistencies?
It could be part of it, because now you have a huge gap between what you thought you had and what you actually have on ground. However, the question that will come from that again was, so the 3 months of transition, shouldn't those 3 months have brought out all these gaps? And if those gaps have been revealed, then some work should have started, even when the best 11, or how did you refer to them, and we're not on ground. So in that period, is it possible to have found out about that CBN audited report and to have known that the amount that CBN was saying we had as reserve, that we did not actually have it because we have pledged it in forwards and all that, we have committed those amounts? And if that has been found out in those 3 months, will it have helped in how we approach the foreign exchange policy? Will it have affected
it? We're going to come to the foreign exchange policy very shortly. But in a minute or two, what needs to be done to bring down the prices of food, especially the staples?
The government needs to go in there. In the short term, we need to move away from saying, we need to start to do. Corn. Maize is a 3 month product, or by 3 months plus.
Is it a plant?
Is it a plant? So rather than talking about we let go and enter the ground and put the corn right inside the ground, let's be able to see it. That's as simple as that. Issues around security are there. Some of the biggest agricultural states in this country are plagued. Plateau is huge in agriculture. Kaduna is huge in agriculture. So anything that messes with this state will affect our food production as a country. Benue, you know. So dealing with security issue, the government, even in that July speech that I mentioned, recognized the fact that there are issues with rural roads. It mentioned in that speech that we're going to do something about being able to connect the centers of production with the centers of consumption. How well have we done with all of that? Has it remained in speech? Do we need to step it up and do a bit more? But there is no doubt that government must get more involved in the space of doing in the agri space.
But they're doing. They released strategic grains. Though I have not seen. Have you seen any of the grains? Do you know when it was released?
Where
the grains are even kept?
I don't know where there are silos.
Where
there are silos all over the country.
Okay.
Yeah, the government, federal government, has silos. In the country, across north, south, west, everywhere. Now, do we have all those quantity of grains? I don't know what the stock is.
What grains are we even talking about?
They would typically be maize, guinea corn, and all of those things are they can be kept for quite a while. But what we have seen in the past, the problem is not government releasing this thing. It is, does it get to the right places? The president is not going to distribute corn. Neither will the governors do. They rely on people to do it. What we have seen in the past is that these grains that are released do not get to the right quarters. So there is also a problem about transparency within the system that will frustrate initiatives like that. But there are other initiatives that government needs to look at. And I'll tell you one. In the space of grains that we are talking about, when we mass produce grains, there's a season, there's a harvest. Mm. and there's a glut in the market. That is why you see maize that is 120 naira becoming 600 naira. There's a glut at some point in time.
Okay, please hold the thought. We'll go for a commercial break. 5 minutes or so, 6 minutes, we'll be back to talk some more.
Okay.
This is Morning Crossfire on 99.3 Nigeria Info.
Welcome back. Development economist Bolaho Olajere is still our guest this morning. We'd like to hear from you. 0700-993-993-993. Your thoughts on the economic challenges Nigeria is currently facing and the way forward. We'd like very kindly to hear from you. 0700-993-993-993. And our female listeners who might find it getting through to that number, find it difficult getting through to that number, can call 0201-465-7190. That's 0201-465-7190. My name is Kofi Bartels. This is Morning Crossfire. Bolahan Olajide is not just a development economist. He is a resourceful individual with a strong background in finance, accounting, investment banking, corporate banking, and business management, with over 24 years professional experience and, might I add, agriculture. Since he talked about maize.
Yes, I was saying something about maize.
Yeah, yeah.
And I said, look, not just maize, grains generally.
Yeah.
We're saying, produce more. When you produce a lot, at harvest, there is a glut. So prices goes down.
So we have so much.
You have so much on the table at the same time. A kind of intervention that some people have done in other parts of the world is that government comes into that space and start to buy during that period. Why is he buying? He's buying, number one, to stop. Number two, to help the price to come up a little bit. That is important for the farmer. The farmer needs to make profit. It is when he makes profit that he's excited to go back and plant again. So government comes in to ensure that the farmer will not make a loss. He will be able to still make some good money, be excited, and he will go back to the farmer and farm again. Here is the other side of that action. The other side of the action is that government has stored up those grains. When those grains are off-season, so if you take maize, that will be, you know, start to get more expensive from December. In fact, by May, you almost cannot touch maize again because of the prices. It's huge. Expensive.
Okay.
So what government will do is that because it has stored up and preserved these things, he start to release. He start to sell into the market. As it is increasing the supply into the market, it will help to moderate the extreme prices up to a level that is, you know, that the consumers can deal with. Now, the problem with that model is that we're saying, government should do it. Anything that government does here will not be sustainable. So if government is looking at a model like that, then it must be able to transit it onto the private sector, who will take over that management of extreme fluctuations, where the price of an item could go all the way from 120 naira, 150 naira to 600 naira within a period of 6-7 months.
No way.
You know. So it's...
That's a way of controlling the prices. Make sure they're stabilized. So if that is the case, then with a federal government announcing, you know, the unlocking of grain reserves following the shortages of food and high cost of food in the country, why are we not seeing the concomitant effect on the prices?
You see,
like I said to you, I have not seen any video, any footage of anybody saying, okay, CEO, these are the things we released, we're taking to the market. But you told me that these silos do exist. So why are we not seeing the effect?
The silos exist. I've been to a couple of them, and I've also been on an advisory mandate for someone who was a concessionaire for, you know, some of those silos. So I know that they are there across the country. The grains, are they there? Yeah, government buy grains into its reserve from time to time. I don't know what stock government has. I don't know when it's going to release it. But what I know for sure is that a lot of times when products have been released from these silos, they did not get to where they're supposed to get.
Like fuel subsidy period, when they said they were releasing some grains to the public and all that as palliatives. A lot of people said they were yet to see any of those in their states.
That is why we need to move away from this palliative mentality side of it. We cannot be, if we're doing palliative on a continuous basis, you show us that something is fundamentally wrong with us. The kind of model that I spoke about earlier is not a palliative model. It's sustainable. You do it on a continuous basis just to you know, and you don't have to, like I said, government can, you should not, because if government stays in it, it will bastardize it. Transit it onto the private sector, and private sector can run that kind of a thing. There is no country where staple food will go from 150 to 600 in 7 months now. We can run a country like that.
All right. Something is definitely wrong somewhere.
And you know what? If grains are not there, it will affect your poultry.
Hmm.
Poultry people are crying right now because maize is a major component of animal feed.
I've been crying for some years. Let's go back to the phone lines. 99.3, good morning.
King of Radio, good morning, sir.
Good morning, welcome. Name and contribution, please.
Yeah, this is Chris.
Welcome, Chris.
Chibolaho Olojede, long time no talk.
Thank you very much. Nice to
be here. How are you, sir?
A full ground.
I miss you, my brother.
Thanks.
King of Radio.
Sir.
I will not be part of those who will give soft landing to these guys who are running the affairs of this country. Before the election, these very stories you read out, or the tape you play, that is what they told Nigerians. 9 months down the line, we are still telling the same stories. If they don't know what to do, why not seek for professionals? Look at what Chibola has been explaining since. If you get people like that involved, these things work out, you will still take the glory. But no. And Nigeria, nobody's ready to sue any of these guys. Thank God for Chief Felano, who sued them the other day. I think he got a judgment.
Yeah, we'll talk about
so
that.
So please, they should get professionals to help them out and sort this country out. Thank you, King of Radio.
Thank you. It's good he went to the Femi Felano judgment, which was going to be my next question. So since he's put it out, let's go there. How feasible fixing prices based on the decree of 1977 under the military regime of Olusegun Obasanjo in today's Nigeria, fixing the prices of certain items like food, spare parts, and all that?
It's a joke. I believe the intentions are good. They see what has been going on in the market and they want some sort of improvement, and they think price fixing will solve it, but it will not solve it. It has failed consistently. It will fail all over again. How do you even begin to do it in this complex society? So if you take a Lagos and you see an item, you will need to fix the price per local government. Even when you come to local government, you need to fix the price per area within the local government.
Because the dynamics are different?
Because the dynamics are totally different. Okay. The rent of my shop on Victoria Island is not the same as the rent of my shop in Egbeda. You have to factor all of that into what you're talking about. Then, if you tell me I am the owner of my product, I know what my cost profile is. You're going to tell me how much I will sell it. I will tell you, go and bring your own product and come and sell at your price.
But how do we overcome greed? Because I read a statement from Mr. Bismarck Rewani recently, as captured in today's Nation newspaper, where he said that the government, Central Bank of Nigeria, needs to remain strategic and deliberate in its initiatives aimed at salvaging the naira. Now we're talking about, currency here, but he talked about the market being battered, the naira flowing into a storm, and the market being battered by forces of speculation, greed, fear, and trepidation. I want to bring that greed and speculation and other things into this agriculture and food sector that we're talking about. The Kano State government recently had to shut down about 10 warehouses and confiscated, food items worth millions of naira, because they're saying that these warehouses were being used to hoard food commodities in Kano State. So apart from the market forces, demand and supply, is there not a component of cartelism, greed, and all that, trying to make sure that the people, in the sector benefit off what's going on to enrich themselves?
Cartelization or anything that is distorting market forces,
hoarding,
are things that government can intervene in, because you don't want the people to be fleeced. But you see, we also cannot have our cake and eat it. We want market forces, right? Some of these things we're talking about are pure market issues. When people get worried about how dollar will move, and they are thinking of their business. How do I blame them that they are trying to take a position in dollars? The people who are truly abusing the process, in my opinion, are also people who have large access to cash, and that could even include politicians, including probably even some state level government. It's possible. When we removed subsidy, money available to the states and local government becomes fatter, much fatter. So they got more cash. With the way the dollar has been going, what stops, if there is nothing that can stop them, people who now have more naira can take advantage of the more naira to go and start taking position in dollars, because I know if I buy the dollars, by next week I can even cash out and make some cool money. So those are things that requires government to watch.
All right, so let's move on to the naira dollar, the exchange rate. The central bank they've pointed out Nigerians keeping money in domiciliary accounts. Do you foresee and do you expect, will you support the federal government taking a step to ensure Nigerians don't keep their money, their dollars in dome accounts, or go for dollars to store as a store of wealth, as an asset, like they say?
Government will not do that. I don't believe government will go in that direction. What I have in my account is what I have in my account.
Should Nigerians be keeping their money in dollars, so saving as a store of value?
You see, it's neither here nor there. The question, there's a fundamental question, and that question is, why are they keeping it in dollars? A lot of people are speculating about what is the future of naira. So Nigerians are, I would rather say, unpatriotically, mostly betting against their own currency. So it's as if, naira will not come up, therefore let me go and take a position in dollars.
Can you blame them?
That's one way to look at it.
Because you're calling them unpatriotic.
Yes, that's one way to look at it.
Okay.
The other way is to say, look, I have a business to run. This business depends on dollar. And I don't know what dollar is going to say next month. Therefore, let me use the naira I have today to take a forward position on dollars. So people are buying up the dollars.
What about a category of people who don't own businesses per se, but who are just Nigerians who have money in the bank? And looking at the fact that their 1,000 naira is fast becoming 500 naira, and they're saying, no, I won't sit down and die here. We shall not die here. I'm going to take my naira, go to Aboki, and say, give me USD, and I'm going to put it in a dome account. Let the naira fall. It doesn't affect me.
It's all part of the speculation.
Can you blame
them?
Because
what that guy is saying is that I think naira will be worse next month. That's what he's saying. So he's betting against the naira.
Can you blame them? Are they being unpatriotic?
What we have seen over the months would be a justification for anybody making that decision. So it is what we now have to do to be able to ensure that all those bettings, if you do something now that hurts a lot of speculators. So people have bought, and then there's something that government does, and the rate went and went down, and they made massive losses. A lot, 50-60% of those people will not come back into speculation by the time that season is over. But you see, we are in a very dire strait. I love the way CBN is beginning. The new guy at the M of Affairs is trying to sanitize that space, trying to rebuild the confidence that has disappeared from that space. But that doesn't solve his supply problem, which he's struggling with. We now find ourselves in a situation, I think the last interview, he said we still have about $2.2 billion outstanding obligation on the CBN that we have not paid. So you can imagine how tough it is for Nigeria as a country not to even be able to have $2 billion.
Are you sure Nigeria does not have $2 billion?
Where are
the proceeds from the sale of crude. Oil crude? Yeah,
which sale of crude? Which crude?
Oh my God! Will you tell your brother, your sister listening this morning, to bet in favor of a currency, to bet on a currency that is failing, that is falling faster than whatever, I don't want to use any example that may offend people, but that is falling so quickly, that is at its worst performance in history, Will you tell anyone out there as an advisor, financial advisor, will you advise them to bet on that currency?
It is a tough advice to give anybody. What financial advisors give are advices that will improve the financial situation of their clients. It is the duty of government to give the kind of advice that you are talking about, to reassure the people, to say, don't bet against the Naira. This is what we are doing, and this is where I'm taking you guys. So this is, you know, so that reassurance, that, you know, inspiring them, making them, building their confidence all over again, is the duty of government.
All right. Yeah. All right. We have our next. Yes, good morning.
Yeah, good morning, Kofi Bate.
Welcome.
This is Pastor Ladipo.
Good to hear from you, Pastor.
Calling from Orilego. Good morning to Olajade.
Good morning, sir.
Yeah, I want to ask you a question concerning all these things. You see, we are talking about this economy and whatever. My question is this. With the rate the National Assembly is going with the bogus allowances and all kinds of allowances they are collecting, how in any way is it affecting our production? Thank you.
All right.
Thank you very much.
Well,
I think the direct effect is on our production. Our production is something totally different. But the direct effect is on the cost profile of government in itself, the cost of the bureaucracy. If we're saying we don't have money, the expectation is that the little money that we have will be judiciously spent. And where you don't spend it judiciously, the people are not happy. So when you say, oh, I want you to pay more tax, I want to do this, they say, what about the one I paid? You're using it to just, you know, spraying it like confetti. You know, that's the impact it has. Well, as far as production is concerned, in this country, we need to be more productive of goods and services. And it is also the duty of government to create the right environment for that to happen.
So you say we need to move from consumption to production?
Very important. Not just of goods, but also of services.
All right.
Yeah.
All right. Interesting. You're staring at the hornet's nest right there. Let us quickly look at some of the things that Mr. Cardoso, Governor of Central Bank of Nigeria, said at House of Reps. Nigerians have a responsibility as well to ensure that the exchange rate becomes better in favor of the Naira. It's not just about government. And he cited
education,
healthcare, and you know, medical tourism and all that. Is that what the government should be saying at this time? Do Nigerians have a role to play in that regard? You know, should parents say, okay, the Naira is struggling, Junior, come, in order to support the Naira, you're not going to school in London anymore. Come stay in Nigeria. Mm. Oh, I have a health issue. Maybe I want to treat cancer or something, God forbid. Oh, well, let me stay in Nigeria and do the treatment, even though we may not have what I need, but I'll do it because I want to support the Naira. Can you blame Nigerians, really?
Well, when it comes to some of those things, yes, there is a partial blame to some segment of Nigerians. And here is it. The former vice president had his surgery at a hospital somewhere in Ikeja there. I still drove past that place a couple of days ago. Yeah. So it means that there is capacity. And that capacity can address even the needs of a high-profile client. So the question is, why do I need to go to another country to go and spend that money? I must ask myself. A lot of Nigerians, thoroughbred professionals in the medical sciences, some of them are back here. And they have practices. And some of those who can afford this money, instead of going out there to go and spend it in this country, for crying out loud. And that is what I think the governor is saying, the governor of Central Bank. The same thing goes for education. A lot of the, now that Japa syndrome has even come into the place, you think it is masters that is exciting a lot of Nigerians that are going for abroad? No, they don't care about the masters. They are taking off from the country for several other reasons, including things around insecurity. The country is not creating enough opportunities for them.
So can they take any responsibility for the fall of the Naira when the root causes of this fall in the exchange rate are from the government itself?
You see,
a reckless handling of the economy, going and borrowing, and you know, lack of accountability, transparency, and proper economic management. And the Nigerians are now picking their passports, dusting it, and saying, I'm leaving the country via the education route so I can have a better life for myself and my family. And then a central bank governor says, it's your fault, partially.
It's what the federal government is saying.
And these Nigerians, well, are sending in billions of dollars every year in foreign remittances to help the economy. Okay. And these politicians use the U.S. When did this thing start? From the elections of years past, from Jonathan's time and so on, and Obasanjo's time, when they started the practice. There was a point when they started the practice of using U.S. dollar to finance their elections. It was a point it started.
Coffee.
And that is when the spiral began.
The season of Japa is not yet producing those kind of remittances that you are talking about. Most of the Japa people have not even settled. So they are seasoned. Of course, they will eventually settle. They will be able to make those remittances. But as it is today, most of them are struggling.
Finally, just a quick one. Is it time to revalue the Naira? Knock off two or three digits.
The problem is not revaluation or redenomination.
Yeah. No,
that's not the problem. The problem is production of goods and services to show up the strength of the Naira, be able to offer something to the world.
Bro, is it going to get anything better? The Ghanaians did it. They didn't die. Heaven did not fall. Knock off the last three digits and let's have $1,
$1
Naira.
What happened to
let's
the
start
city.
Again.
The city crashed dramatically from the 1-1.
But at least, where are they? At least it's 30-something cities to the dollar, if I'm not mistaken.
It has crashed like 400 times. I mean, 400% from where it was. Or more than 400% from where it was. So you're not going to solve the problem by knocking off zero. You're going to solve it by producing an offering to the world.
How many years would that take? 10 years? 5 years?
If we set our minds to it, we will.
All right.
We've had it in the past in this same country where we were able to produce and offer the world more than we are doing today. Today, even toothpick.
Oh, my God. Bola Olojere, thank you so very kindly for it.